Krr. Kunstraum, Kunstraum. Der Podcast mit Emily und Ralf. Studio Talk.
Paloma, I read a new term for my life. It was hempcrete. I know concrete, but what is hempcrete?
The hempcrete is a very basic material in many ways. It's a combination of a straw, but a straw that comes from the hemp plant. So rather than a wheat straw or a barley straw, it's the same idea. It's the kind of stem of the plant, cut into kind of fine pieces, and then mixed with lime. So that's where the kind of crete element, I guess, comes in. So you make this combination of this kind of dry straw, a wet mix of lime, and then you cast it into a shuttering, so a kind of a mould. And it can take any shape, so you can make blocks out of hempcrete, or as we've done, you can make kind of whole walls, or you can make panels. So it's quite a versatile material, but I think the kind of relationship to concrete is a little bit misleading, because whilst it can be formed in any kind of shape like concrete can, it doesn't have any of the strength. So it's actually a very kind of crumbly material. It's not structural. So it always comes with another structure, and that structure is generally made out of timber.
So it's nearby timber, or is it nearby a brick?
It's a strange one. It's neither, I'd say. So, because it's not structural, can't be used externally as a cladding, but it's everything. It's wool mass. It's the stuff that, it's everything else that isn't the kind of skin on the outside or the thing holding up the building. It's your insulation. It's your kind of acoustic buffering. It also has the capacity to store heat because of the lime. It has what we call thermal mass. So it's almost like a battery. You can kind of charge it up with warmth, with heat, and then it holds that heat and releases it back over time. It's also a kind of thermal and kind of vapor regulator. So it can draw moisture out of the air, and then in the same way as the heat, release it back over time. And that can perform a really important role in a house in terms of reducing kind of mould and condensation on windows. Any kind of extra moisture in the air, it can be absorbed into the walls. And then when that moisture drops, it comes back. But it's always kind of keeps it at level of moisture and humidity that's good for human inhabitation. So it's a very kind of friendly material in that sense, and creates good environments.
Kunstraum, Kunstraum. Studio Talk.
What was the challenge to design the flat house, a house made out of hempcrete?
There were a number of challenges. The first one was that Steve wanted to not only build a hempcrete house, but to grow the hemp for the house on the land around the building. So Steve is Steve Barron, and he's a filmmaker. He directs all kinds of extraordinary films and TV, but decided that he wanted to do something that would give a kind of direction forward in terms of this question of sustainability. So he got very interested in hemp and all of its amazing kind of capacities and potential, and decided that he would become a hemp farmer. Mm-hmm. So he found a farm, and then the first thing he did really was to sow the fields with the hemp seed and to start to grow this crop. So at the same time as the hemp was growing, we were designing the house and working out what we could do with the volume of hemp that he was creating. So that was a challenge in itself, was kind of beginning to kind of understand the material, but as a kind of raw material rather than a product. So, and in the end, we ended up using two components of the plant. So there's the fibre, which surrounds the stem of the plant, And you'll actually, everyone's actually very familiar with hemp fibre because we've been using it for centuries in Levi's jeans. Mm-hmm. It was combined with cotton, but the hemp was giving the kind of strength of the fabric. In ropes, in sailcloth, in linen, you know, it's, right. a fibre that's been used for many, many years. So we use that fibre to make a cladding product, combining it with kind of new forms of resin, which are based on in sugar. With the kind of straw, we made the hempcrete. So in the end, there were kind of two uses. And then Steve is also now using the oils, the kind of CBDs that come from the plant as well to make health products and things for your skin.
CBD oil has a relation with this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's all in the same family. So the one plant produces so many different outputs.
Was a complicated process, or is something that actually, yeah, we could use easily?
It's both. It's very easy to sow. You can sow it in most soils. It doesn't need much looking after. It doesn't take pesticides. The plant in itself is very resilient. We've lost all of the equipment, technology to process the hemp plant. Because the fibres are so strong,
mm-hmm. okay.
it's quite hard to... Basically, lots of modern machinery isn't strong enough to cope with really? The strength of the fibre. So mm-hmm. what Steve found on his farm is that he had to go and find a kind of ancient vintage combine harvester mm-hmm. tractor in order to harvest the crop because the modern machinery was being broken. So you needed the really? Kind of... Yeah.
How long did it take to build the house?
To build the house, it depends which element. So I guess
with this technology.
With this technology, there was the kind of harvesting and then the processing, and that probably in itself took a couple of months, but that was more kind of finding out where to get the different elements processed. And then the hempcrete was made into cassettes, so that happened at a small factory. The cassettes were fabricated over kind of 1 week, 2 weeks. And then the cassettes or the panels were then erected over 2 days.
As I understand it, was first there was the farm, the hemp farm, mm-hmm. and then was the house, the hempcrete yeah. house. But is it the basic idea to have first the farm or the local products and then you look, or another question, if you have a wheat farm, would you create a wheat house? So, mm-hmm. so how is it mm-hmm. linked? The farming and the construction and the materials for the house.
As part of Flat House, I established an organisation called Material Cultures, which is looking at the questions addressed in the house and looking how we can scale these up. So within that organisation, Material Cultures, we've been doing kind of further research into these questions, and we've looked at a kind of regional approach. Really makes sense, you know, it doesn't make sense to be shipping straw, wheat straw or hemp straw around the world. You know, you can grow these crops in any country and they're really kind of, they're kind of low value waste products in some senses. So in a way, it begins to set up quite an exciting, in our mind, kind of return to a kind of a local relationship to resources. And then regional manufacturing rather than kind of this kind of highly specialised international set of supply chains.
I was interested in your space. So what is your space of work? What does it mean to you? How does it look like? Where do you work? It's just, you know, a place where you have a computer and you need some light in the computer, or it's more than that? It's an art space. It's like an atelier or, yeah.
Currently, we have a studio that's shared with some other practices, and it's one big room, and it's full of exciting people. So I think that's the thing that kind of feels the most important to me at the moment in my kind of point of where we are in the practice is that kind of conversation and the conversation that's happening in the room between these different people doing different things but sharing lots of ideas. But in terms of kind of my... I fly quite light in terms of I just have one laptop. That's all I really need. And some pieces of paper.
Okay, so conversation and exchange, it's what's your point of inspirations, or do you have other methods like taking a walk outside? Or
a lot of the kind of inspiration comes from making. So we do still try very much to make sure that we do things with our own hands. With Material Cultures, we run a kind of module at Central St Martin's in construction with architecture students. So we work with 30 students to build something every year.
And what is your vision right now?
Oh, like which vision?
What is still...
deep question.
Very good.
The thing that I'm really excited about is kind of where Material Cultures is going to go as an organisation. And we are working on some larger scale projects with developers, so going from kind of one house to 100 houses, but the same technology and the same principles, but scaling up and looking at kind of local or manufacturing that happens on site, so creating systems in a kind of almost a kind of micro factory on the construction site, integrating that with the kind of skilling of a labour force as well, through which we can really begin to integrate kind of new materials as well, and give them an application at scale.
If I'm looking here around, I see brick walls, wooden shelves, an interesting light from ceiling. So is this a space you prefer, or is it by accident that you live in such a interesting surrounding environment?
It's definitely very intentional. I mean, I didn't build this. This building was built in the 1900s, because I think in many ways the ways that things were built in the 1900s much better. The materials have a kind of integrity. They'll last for a long time. The technology's been around for years. They're very adaptable, very robust, resilient. And I enjoy kind of seeing how something is made, and the tactility that creates. And then the things that I've brought, I guess, have that same relationship in that generally things are kind of relatively unfinished and raw. There's always a kind of point of a project when I go and see building sites. I often much prefer a building just before it's finished, before all the ends are tied up and everything's kind of polished. So that's probably how I live.
Yeah, it's definitely unpolished. And may you give some informations about the area or the neighbourhood where we are now?
So we're in the East End of London, in Bethnal Green, and the building that we're in is part of four blocks which form the Winkley Estate, and they were built in the 1900s to house carpenters and joiners. They were designed to work, but also to live. So on the ground floor, there are kind of workshops, but also shop fronts. So the space that I live in was a former shop. So it has a big kind of shop glass window on the front. And then the basement would have been a workshop and a store. So it's this very, very tight-knit kind of urban fabric.
Yes, thank you very much, Paloma, for your time, for receiving us. So we are very happy to get to meet you, and we hope to see you in Munich.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's been a real pleasure.
Gallery Talk. Das war Kunstraum, Kunstraum. Der mobile Podcast mit Emily Barsi und Ralf Hohmann. Weitere Episoden erscheinen aktuell auf unserer Homepage kunstraum-münchen.de oder überall dort, wo es Podcasts gibt. Unseren Ausstellungsraum finden Sie im Münchner Glockenbachviertel, Holzstraße 10, nahe Sendlinger Tor. Der Kunstraum München wird gefördert vom Kulturreferat der Landeshauptstadt München. Unser Podcast erscheint mit Unterstützung der Stiftung Kunstfonds im Rahmen von Neustart Kultur.